2-2 to Hoskins. Strike him out! 10 strikeouts for Jacob DeGrom. The 55th time in his career he struck out 10 or more.
And a called strike three. He got him on the outside edge. 8 strikeouts for Nola, and just like DeGrom, he has retired 16 in a row.
Well, that was pretty much it last night. A great pitcher's duel up in Queens. A classic. Phillies lose to the Mets 1-0. Second straight night, the Phillies had to face a Cy Young winner, and last night, not able to get much done. Good morning, everybody, along with my pal, Jody Mack. I'm Glenn Mack now. Jody, I do not like the outcome, but I love a nice, tight pitcher's duel. You?
And the fact that you watched every single pitch, whatever time you tuned in, I guess you could have gone over to the NFL Network for Cowboys preseason action if that's your druthers. But, man, you couldn't turn it off because every the game's hanging in the balance. They give up a run. Then you know any one swing can get it tied if you're the Phillies. Oh, except Jacob DeGrom is pitching, so that one swing's going to be hard to come by. Phenomenally exciting game. Even Diaz giving up the couple of walks and stolen bases to put the tying and the winning run in scoring position on the last at bat of the game. But then Diaz, who's also having a phenomenal game, did what he did and struck out the last batter. So, yeah, the result was not what you wanted if you're a Phillies fan, but the excitement level of the game was tremendous.
Let me go over a couple of these details with you. DeGrom, we said he goes 6. I guess it's because of the injuries and stuff. They're just not going to let him go deeper than that. But he allows 2 hits, no walks, 10 Ks. He's throwing 101-mile-an-hour fastballs in the 6th inning. But I guess, as I said, they're protecting him is what they're doing. They want to make sure he's pitching into October.
Right. And they're probably overprotective. He looked perfectly fine to me in the 6th inning. It looked like he could have continued doing what he was doing. But, yes, they are falling very much on the side of caution with him.
Okay, and then the Mets bullpen takes over. The trumpets for Diaz. You like the trumpets?
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
I do think so, too. I know, you know, you're a Phillies fan, so you're not supposed to love it, but it gets those 48,000 people on their feet. It's the best. Sandman was pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, this side of Mariano Rivera, it might be the best entrance music. Yeah. Trevor Hoffman with AC/DC was also pretty good. But they're few and far between to compare what the Mets have going with Edwin Diaz right now.
All right, so as you mentioned, he gets a little shaky. He walks two, strikes out Castellanos to end it. My Twitter feed was full of, $100 million too much for that guy.
Of course.
Hey, it's, you know.
He's actually picked it up over the last couple of weeks. You could have sent that tweet about 182 times over the course of a 40-game stretch when he couldn't buy a hit, but he's actually been better of late.
All right. Nola as well was great. He goes 8. He gets that rare complete game loss. Scatters 4 hits, walks 1, strikes out 8. Offense did nothing behind him. Nola really is one of the best starters in Major League Baseball. Jody Mack, we are now in the middle of August. We are headed towards September. Can I have faith and belief that Aaron Nola is going to avoid that late season collapse that we have seen in the past few years?
Why not take 5 more starts and then come up with that decision? Let him play pitch a couple more into August, end of August. Oh, the calendar turns. It's September. Aaron Nola has not been good in September. We're going to get a handful, 2 or 3 starts before we get to the last week of September, which will lead into October. And, yes, I still do believe the Phillies are making the playoffs despite last night's loss. We don't have to. It's trending in the right direction, better than it has in previous seasons, but there may just be something that when he reaches an innings limit, it affects his arm in some way. So I'm not ready to go there today, but I'm optimistic. I'm not locking it in, but I am optimistic because he's trending better.
Let me just say at 10:05 on August the 14th that there's a little piece in the back of my mind that has that fear. I can't avoid that nagging fear that what I've seen, because everything else is going so well. All right, so the Phils are 4-10 against the Mets this season. They've lost the four previous series. They could pull it out today and get it. Zach Wheeler on the mound. What is it, 140 start against that Chris Bassett? How are you feeling today?
Well, good, because it's Wheeler. Bassett is a really nice acquisition. At the time, I even commented here on WIP, the Phillies might have missed the boat, because he was gotten for a fair package, not an outrageous package, and I thought he would have been a nice addition as a fifth starter here in Philadelphia. He's been just that for the Mets. So it's not like they're facing a stiff. Bassett's a nice pitcher, but if you've got Wheeler on the hill, Phillies have a pitching advantage going into that.
Yeah, I like it today. Can I say one thing that's going to make me sound really old here?
Go ahead.
I'm watching the Phillies and the Phillies hitters, and the Mets hitters as well, but the Phillies hitters certainly. Two strikes against them, and then they flail away, right? Swinging from the ankles. And why does it, you know, you got a guy like DeGrom, who to me, he's throwing 101 miles an hour. You want to try to take a little bit of a protective stance up there, and nobody shortens out. I'll give you two examples. Top of the third inning, Nick Maton is up. And Nick Maton is not exactly going to lead the league in any hitting category. He's got two strikes on him. He swings from his heels and stares out in a daze like, oh, how did that happen? Top of the fifth, Brandon Marsh, two strikes. Takes this swing and tries to hit one into the Hudson River as his knees buckle from the force. And this was, by the way, after landing on his knee, swinging on strike two. And he's cursing under his breath. Jody Mack, you are a baseball man. And I know there's no shame in the strikeout now like there used to be, but this is a 1-0 game. Don't you want to just try to get on base? Don't you want to shorten it up?
You want to, but it's easier said than done. And that's why Brandon Marsh's offensive numbers aren't all that good in the acquisition of him coming over. That's his swing. And he doesn't change it, and he hasn't changed it. And if you're thinking he's going to change it just because Jacob DeGrom's on the mound, I think you're hoping against hope. No, I was not surprised. And, oh, by the way, rather than just put Philly hitters in their place, Jacob DeGrom did that for you. You don't need to do it. He's just that good.
Well,
his
I
stuff
know.
Is that nasty. You could choke up halfway up the bat. And he's still going to drop a slider at 99 miles an hour that's going to be in the strike zone until about 6 inches before the plate, and it's going to drop 6 inches.
Yeah, and I know I'm stuck on this one thing. And again, I don't want everybody to be – my reference is going to be old here, but Matty Alou, for lack of a better name. Right?
You talk about a slap hitter. That's as good as you can get right there.
Yeah, right? Led the league in hitting and hit about, you know, five doubles and one home run every year. But my point being that he's really tough to hit. I just think nobody anymore thinks like to play protectively when they have two strikes, and it's something that I wish they would do. Jody, my baseball career ended in junior varsity. Okay, that's how good I was. I was a backup second baseman. I hit 400 that year, Jody. 2 for 5. Didn't
nice.
Get to play much. But I mean, you know, my old coach back then used to say, damn it, there's two strikes. You're not going to hit it over the fence. That's it.
Yeah,
I'm preaching here.
This is Major League Baseball.
I know, and that was 1970, whatever, and I know. So you're telling me I'm wrong.
The game is – I'm not telling you're wrong. I'm just telling you don't let it bother you as much as it sounds like it does. Because you're not going to change it sitting at home, and the Phillies aren't going to change. They are what they are. Their players have the swings that they have, even though what you lay out psychologically makes a ton of sense. They just don't do it. Major League Baseball doesn't. And the Phillies
don't.
Aren't the only team. Everybody.
No, I know that. Oh, the Mets are doing the same thing. I know. I know. It's one of those things that will always drive me crazy. And listen, I don't want to be that guy who rails against the game and what things used to be. I accept change in sports. I embrace change in sports. But last night I'm thinking two runs is going to win this game. Just get on base. Okay.
You know what you sound like to me.
I'm Sue.
Keith Hernandez talking about the Phillies' inability to play defense and fundamentals, which, oh, by the way, they've been great at these games.
Great, even though
they didn't score a run last night. The double play they turned late in the game, Hoskins coming in, firing to second, Maton covering first, the double up at the plate the night before. Great play by Castellanos, who is still a butcher in right field. But on that given play, it was perfect, perfect throw, perfect tag. The Phillies have played really fundamentally sound baseball despite Keith Hernandez railing
away. I know, and it is even more fun that, you know, I know they lost, but they are playing very good, very solid defensive baseball against, well, overall they are. Is that Stott over Didi? Is that Marsh moving in the left field? Is that what Keith Hernandez is not seeing?
Marsh is center field. I don't know.
Center field, what did I say? Center field, yeah.
He hadn't seen Marsh play center field for the Phillies, so that is a major upgrade.
Right, and Didi was terrible. Didi couldn't field.
No, I disagree.
Really?
Didi was improved defensively this year over what he was last year. Last year, his defense fell off pretty badly. But this year, he actually was making all the plays and made a highlight reel film play about once every 2 weeks. I did not think his defense was the problem. His offense was the problem. I counted this guy in for 20 home runs this year, and he couldn't hit a home run from second base starting at second base.
He was only 19 short, right. Yeah.
Damn. Okay. No, the bigger problem with Didi, and Stott's just as good. I don't think Stott's a major upgrade over Didi defensively. If it is, it's slight. But Stott's going to be here for the next decade, so get him going right now, and he's certainly improved over the last month.
Okay. So last night in New York, they had 48,000 people, I think, at that game. I mean, they were full. It was
above capacity.
Yeah, it was 43,857. There you go. Are we going to see those crowds here next weekend, Phil's Mets? Are we going to get that here?
If you do, I'll say this, and I'm judging on TV like everybody else. It seemed to me, if you wanted to put a percentage on it, 2% of the crowd was Philly fans. I've been in Citi Field when Philly fans have come in years that Mets haven't been that good, and you get close to 50% Philly fans in the house. I've been at games at both the Vet and Citizens Bank Park where 50% of Met fans are in the house. There are, depending on where the teams are at. Now, right now, they're both playoff teams. Mets are going to have the second-best record in the National League when all is said and done, behind only the Dodgers, and the Phillies are going to be a wild card. But they're both playoff teams. It was heavy-handed Met fans last night. I'm hoping that same percentage is what we're looking at Citizens Bank Park. I fear we're not. Because I did go down to the game the other night after doing the show in Eagles training camp with Joe DeCamera, and hung around, and I invited DeCamera to come with me. He declined. I went over to the Turf Club in between, hit a couple of races, made some money, so it was a real good day.
Yeah, it's a good day for Jody.
I went over, got a chance to talk to Rob Thompson, had dinner with Charlie Manuel, of all people. That's why I sat next to him in the cafeteria.
Very nice. He's the greatest guy in the world.
Charlie and his wife, and had a great 45-minute dinner conversation with those guys. It kind of was a disappointing crowd. I thought it would be better than that. Now it rained, which kind of threw everything off. They brought the stupid tarp out, and it wasn't even raining. I said, what the hell are they doing? This game's not going to get off on time? 10 minutes later, just a deluge, and it came down buckets for 20 minutes and then stopped, and they got the game in. But it wasn't all that great a crowd, and I thought it was going to be... I don't think Philadelphia's bought in 100% yet to this Phillies or a playoff team.
I agree.
Because of the 10 years they've been waiting, kind of like you and me waiting on Nola, we'll go as long as we have to feel as good as we want to about his ability to pitch in September and October. I think the Philly fans are also in that kind of mode.
Yeah, I do as well. The upside is the pitching has been great. Suarez was terrific the other night. Nola, I mean, they went toe-to-toe with a couple of Cy Young Award winners, which is pretty good. And the other upside is they are, as we sit here this morning, a game or a game and a half up on both the Brewers and the Cardinals. One of those teams will win the Central and thus get into the playoffs, but the Phillies will battle the other. They're a half a game up on the Padres. And, Jody, the Padres have their own new problems. What are your thoughts today on the suspension of, I don't want to say the suspension, on the impact of the suspension of Fernando Tatis Jr. for the rest of this year and first, whatever, 38, 40 games of next year.
Here's the one piece of information that hasn't come out, and I don't know if it'll ever come out, but then again, stuff gets leaked out all the time. When did he test positive? We don't really know. All we know is when Major League Baseball announced it and said the suspension begins immediately. He might have tested positive months ago because he wasn't playing. He was on the injured list, so they may have decided, listen, we're not announcing this now because we're not going to allow him to get games counting as suspensions that he wasn't going to play anyway. Because he was injured, and he was, so why should he benefit from the fact that he's injured? And we want him to miss 80 games that he's capable of playing in. I'd really like to know when he actually tested positive. Did they hold the results? Did they announce it immediately? Any way you slice it, it handicaps the Padres, and they've been playing playoff type ball all year without Tatis. Without Soto and Bell, who they added to trade deadline, so it doesn't eliminate the Padres. You don't go, oh, now they got no chance. Well, no, they were that good even without him all year. But much like we're waiting on the return of Bryce Harper, they were waiting on the return of Fernando Tatis, and it's not happening, San Diego.
Yeah, it's a very good comparison as well, and that does give the Phillies a little bit of an edge. All right, 215-592-9494, 215-592-9494. We got all that. We're a day past Eagles-Jets, a game that Jody McDonald watched with intense interest for both teams. Looks like Zach Wilson out, 2 to 4 weeks with a bone bruise, dodged a bullet there?
Oh, it's more than a bone bruise. It's a tear, but it's a minor tear. Okay. So they're going to do a surgery, and even with now the advent of these great laser surgeries, you can come back relatively quickly. They're stating it is probably 2 to 4 weeks, but it was an actual tear that if it was just a bruise, then he wouldn't have surgery. He's having surgery, so it's a tear.
All right. Likewise, Jalen Hurts dodges a bullet in that first drive. He breaks the pocket, runs right, well out of bounds when he gets clobbered by Quincy Williams, who launches himself head first. So he's okay and had the one opening drive, goes 6 for 6. They score the touchdown. One day later, Jody, what is your takeaway from that game? What sticks with you off of that game?
The fact that the Eagles lost the game is about as irrelevant as it can be. The Jets four-teamers are better than the – it's not even the Jets four-teamers.
No.
It's the Jets special team with the 50-yard return that put them in position to score the game-winning touchdown. Yeah, if you're a Jet fan and you're taking solace in that, go for it. But it really doesn't mean anything because it was 14-0 before you could blink with the Eagles, both first-team offense and first-team defense, looking great.
Yeah, and just it is one preseason game. I don't even know who all is playing special teams, but Eagles special teams were bad last year. I don't want that to be a recurring problem this year. So that's the only thing. I was really impressed with Hurts. And again, you don't want to put too much import on it. It is one drive. I will say the Jets defense was, you know, they're running to the ball. I'll give them that much. I don't know how talented they are, but they certainly hustled in that one drive where the Eagles scored the touchdown. And, man, Hurts was 6 for 6. He had the really nice touchdown pass to Goddard, who was wide open, but he hit him in stride. The pass to Quez Watkins, I thought, was nice as Hurts threw rolling to his right. Someday I'd like to see Hurts throw rolling to his left, but we'll see. He had a scrambling touchdown that was called back. He did it without looking for A.J. Brown. He did it without Devontae Smith. As I said, Jody, it's one series in a preseason opener against the Jets. But to me, it was an encouraging start for Hurts because he just looked in the flow. And he was hitting guys in stride. And we're not going to see him again to the regular season. You certainly want to see it go out that way.
Two things that kind of jumped off the page for me in the time that the Eagles ones were on the field offensively. The fact that he didn't throw the ball to A.J. Brown. You know, I do my show with Johnny Mack, who's at every single Eagle practice, and basically every day comes on and goes, And Jalen Hurts just keeps throwing the ball to A.J. Brown. It's a given. It's almost a joke in practice that he is so locked into getting A.J. up to speed and throwing the ball to him. He throws it as much to him as he does everybody else combined in practices. They have a game, six passes, none of them go to A.J. Brown, which I think was a great thing. Just showed that, yeah, practice is one thing, game would be another, even though it's just a practice game. They did spread the ball around, which was great. And the one thing that I had to laugh at was, it'll be completely forgotten a week from now, and certainly in November when we're talking about the Eagles and what they're doing, where they are in the standings. The first touchdown of the year was a Jalen Hurts run, and it was called back because of a penalty. Mm-hmm. So they had to do it again. So instead he throws the 22-yard touchdown pass to Goddard. There's been some debate, at least on my shows, over the last when I was on with the camera and my buddy Johnny Mack. Well, the Eagles should stick with what they did last year. The Eagles need to run the football. They know they can run the football. The offensive line is the stalwart of the team. They would need to make the playoffs this year. Why are they trying to throw the football more? Because they are. Because they did go out and give A.J. Brown $100 million. Because they know if you want to win a Super Bowl, chances are in the NFL in 2022, you got to be able to throw it better than the Eagles did last year. Last year's stats are now borderline irrelevant. The Eagles are going to start this year as a passing team, and they will go at least as long, if not longer, before, if it's not working, they make this decision, oh, we got to go back to running the football. Not happening.
Agree. I mean, if they have to run the ball, I know they can run the ball. Let's see if they can pass the ball. I'm totally with you. Okay, one more thing. We got a Scheib Vintage Sports giveaway today. $50 gift card, Scheib Vintage Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Check out their throwback apparel at their Center City location or scheibsports.com. And by the way, a previous winner, guy won on our show about a month ago, tweeted me a picture yesterday that he received his Santa Hates Dallas sweatshirt that he got from the gift card. He said, I can't wait to wear this fall. So today, you too can win. And here's what I want to go with. Caller yesterday. A guy called yesterday after the Phillies won Friday night 2-1 in the 10th inning, and we were talking about Vierling's throwing out the runner at the plate on that potential sack fly. Great throw by him. And this was after the Phillies score on the top of the inning, 10th, on a sacrifice fly. And this guy said, the most exciting play in sports is the sacrifice fly. I never considered that, Jody, but he kind of explained it. He says, like, you see the setup, and then you see you look at the guy at third itching, and then you see the fielder kind of trying to move in a step, get some momentum, the anticipation, you get a play at the plate, et cetera. It can be exciting. I don't know if I'd put it the most exciting play, but he made a case. So here's the deal. What is the most exciting play in sports, any sports? Jody, I always would say the long punt return, but you'd never see those anymore. The punt return is almost dead from football. Any sport can be, well, you know, I don't want to give all of them away. Is there one that you would say, and we'll just take out of the mix, for you, Jody McDonald, this is the most exciting play in sports?
Yeah, no, I don't want to go because if
you don't want
to
give it away.
Tell you the one that I do, it would absolutely be the best one. So,
okay.
And then you're okay. Taking a second place winner.
Oh, you're pretty sure yourself there.
Just a little bit.
Okay. Do we agree that Moshe Kravitz will be the judge on this?
Who? Who you want to make the judge?
Moshe. Moshe, called to serve. You are willing and able?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for this honor.
We're throwing him into the mosh pit? Is that what you're telling
yes,
us?
Yes. There you go.
Okay.
There you have it.
I butcher. See, I talked to him about it before the show, and I'm surprised that you don't do this.
What's that?
I've called him Moshe. Excuse me. I've called him Moisha.
No.
You've never called him Moisha?
No.
And I
grew up with more people named Moshe than you.
You probably did, but did you not grow up with any Moishas?
My great uncle.
Okay, there you go.
And but he was about 80 when I was 10.
I had a buddy whose name was spelled the exact same as our producer's now, and he went as Moisha. So that's what I've called, because I see his name, and that's the way I pronounce that, and I apologize to him. I think Sonny Hill called him Mush before the show started at the end of the show today. So our producer extraordinaire, Mr. Kravitz, oftentimes gets his name butchered, guilty as charged, Jody McDonald. So I'm apologizing in advance.
Moshe, is this something you've had your whole life, that people get it wrong? wrong?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, it's like most of my friends for my whole life have called me Mosh. And that's what you guys call me when people say my full name. They say it as Moshe, which is the correct
yeah,
pronunciation.
You got to get the little E in at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, if for especially Jewish people, but for people over a certain age, Moshe has consistently come. I was saying to Jody before the show that despite neither of them being Jewish, Big Daddy and Jody for years called me Moish or Moisha.
Moisha.
And I didn't mind it coming from them.
Oh, there you go. All right. So now we all got it right.
I'll get it wrong before the show
That's
is over
right.
again.
Okay.
I could pretty much
anyway,
assure you that.
So a $50 gift card from Shive Vintage Sports. But as always, don't drive Moisha crazy by just calling to win a prize, because you won't. We've raised Phillies issues to start. Big time pennant race. I want to talk a little bit more about the attendance when we go back. We've talked about the Eagles after the first preseason game. There are many things for you to have an opinion about today. We're going to get into a little bit of Sixers issue. We're going to give you a TV review as the show comes on. Ben Davis is going to join us. I was watching other preseason football last night. Jody did a little scouting on Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. So whatever you want to call about, you are welcome to do so. And you can offer the most exciting play in sports to win the $50 gift card to Shive Vintage Sports. Oh, which, by the way, we have our Shive Vintage throwback moment of the week. 215-592-9494. Jody McDonald, Glenn Macnow, 94 WIP.